So my name is Dr. David Linehan, and I'm the president and CEO of Ponce Health Sciences University, which is a medical school, psychology school, public health, and nursing school down in Puerto Rico. And I'm also president of a company called Tiber Health Innovations, and that company is taking a lot of the healthcare curricula that we've developed and is expanding it and standardizing that healthcare curricula across the globe. And so we're using technology to make that happen.
Sounds fascinating. Do you have any websites that you can refer us to?
Yeah, so our website is psm.edu for the university and tiberhealth.com for the technology company.
We're talking this morning with Dr. David Linehan. According to the American Association of Medical Colleges, we are in bad shape when it comes to the numbers of doctors who are going to be serving the public coming up. Tell me about those numbers and how bad a situation is it?
It's staggering, and it's something that we all know about, but it seems like we're doing very little to fix. In the United States, we're projecting in just a short time by 2025, 2030, to be 125,000 physicians short at the current rate of people retiring and graduating. 120,000 doctors short, and we're already short right now, is just a massive number. But when you look at it from a global perspective, according to the World Health Organization, we're about 13 million healthcare workers short on the planet. And things that we take for granted here in the U.S. are exacerbated across the planet. And one of the things I like to say is I know Elon Musk wants to talk about sending people to Mars, and that's fabulous. Humankind needs to explore. But the real problem of today globally is solving the healthcare problem. So we all have a standard of living, a quality of life that will help us succeed as a species. And so healthcare is the problem of today, and it's exciting to be part of trying to fix that.
Well, Dr. Linehan, why is this? Is it because there are so many people, the world is growing so fast, or are people not going into medicine such as they were, or both?
Both, actually. So people are going into medicine. Medical schools, we have a lot more students applying than we have spaces for. So I think one of the other problems is we need to create the capacity to provide education, high quality education, for the students to become doctors, to become healthcare workers. One of the things I often talk about when I speak to other medical school deans or people in healthcare is we're supposed to be smart people. We all know this is a problem. We're supposed to find solutions to fix it. And I have to say that, you know, for the last 100 years, we've all known this has been a problem, but we've not really done a good job at fixing it. And that's really what I hope my company does, is how we go about standardizing health education globally, that we can deliver that high quality that's necessary to make the healthcare system work of education, and then be able to spread it out and scale it and deliver it across the globe.
Before we get into Tiber Health, you also make a good point, and I didn't want to forget to talk to you about this, that the pool of doctors is almost overwhelmingly white. Is it overwhelmingly white and female?
That's a great question. It's the numbers in medical school now have switched. There's actually more females in medical school than there are males. However, there's more males practicing as doctors, because that hasn't kind of fled through the system yet. With respect to the cultural competencies, I don't necessarily want to talk too much about race, but I want to talk about the cultural aspect and why it's so important for healthcare. And I'm going to give an example, because this actually happened to me. I had to have heart surgery about 8 months ago. And the doctor walks into the room and he says, "Hey, Dave, we got some bad news. There's some blockages in the heart, and we need to do surgery." Now, in that room is my wife and me when the doctor's telling me what's going on. If I walk into a patient down in Puerto Rico who has the same physiology, so they have the same issue that I had, the number of people in the room are 20. The parents, the grandparents, the neighbors. There's a whole community that's in the room with that patient. Now, how you treat the patient medically is the same. You can do a surgery, a stent, what you're going to do is the same. But how you communicate that information to the patient is significant. I'm an Irish Catholic boy from the Midwest. You don't touch me unless you absolutely have to. Yeah. But in the Hispanic culture, you know, you have to hug, you have to get involved with the family and discuss what the options are. Those little bits of understanding that cultural aspect are worth hundreds of millions of dollars to the U.S. economy, because patient satisfaction, patients' recidivism, how often they come back into the hospital, all those things matter in how we get reimbursed. And so that cultural aspect not only helps improve the patient quality and the outcomes, but also helps improve the reimbursement. And what we're seeing is a lot of the medical schools, a lot of the health systems are starting to recognize we need to have a much more diverse workforce, because that improves patient outcomes. And really, that's what we're all about.
Are you okay, by the way?
I am okay. Thank you. I was caught off guard with it. I thought I just had the flu. I never had any symptoms. But I don't have much wood around here. But knock on wood, I'm doing great. Thanks for asking.
Oh, good, good. Glad to hear that. So what are you doing with Tiber Health? I looked it up, and it's a technology company focused on medical school education. Does that pretty much sum it up? And what are you doing?
Well, not only that's a great question. Not only medical school, but health education.
Okay.
We need more doctors, but we also need more nurses, and we need more physical therapists and occupational therapists. So we need that whole spectrum of people to go into the workforce. The problem we have with our health education system right now is we're all siloed. We don't really communicate well with each other on how to deliver our curriculum. We try, but it's not there. What we're looking to do is figure out a way to standardize and scale that education. And so imagine you're a student and you come into one of our schools. The first thing we hand you is an iPad. That iPad has all your lectures, all your exams, all your assessments, the whole package. And so what you do is you work through that material in a very structured way. And we still have class. This is not an online thing. But you take that lecture offline, and then when you come into class, we work through clinical cases. We get the students in front of patients at a much earlier phase. And that process allows us to kind of standardize the curriculum so we can actually take what we deliver here in the U.S. and spread it out into Africa and Asia and South America. And we're actually doing it in South America right now. And that standardization allows us to make sure we have a quality that is so significant in the delivery of healthcare, because this is a zero failure game. You know, you got people's lives on the line. So you have to make sure that that quality is there. So by standardizing it, it allows us to up the quality, and then we know what the product is we're delivering into these communities across the globe. And some of the ideas are this. If we have a school in Africa, and we know we have Somali students, and we know in Minneapolis, St. Paul, there's a large Somali population, we can actually pull some of those healthcare workers out of those regions and put them into those health systems in the United States where there's a diverse population where we can't get access to those healthcare workers within our borders. That will improve the outcome to those patients in that community. It will help the reimbursement rates for the hospital, and it provides social mobility for people across the globe so they can start moving up that academic ladder, and we can help, you know, improve their lives.
What I hear you saying is there's more consistency under your model around the world.
Right. And the thing is, the more people we get into the model, the more data we collect, because all that consistency and standardization revolves around using large data sets. So we use machine learning, we use APIs to help us be able to predict how these students are doing. So the more students we have across the globe utilizing this, the more accurate our predictive models become. And that's how we can then provide feedback loops on the curriculum to say, hey, we're a little bit weak here, so let's adjust it. And that's how we go about using the technology to improve the curriculum year in and year out.
Have you found a way to address these healthcare deserts that I've been reading about, where even in the United States, in the Midwest, you can go hundreds of miles without finding a doctor?
Yeah, it's just striking to me that we have to deal with this in the U.S., and it's even worse across the globe. I think in South America, in Ecuador and Peru, the number one cause of death is just lack of access to a doctor, being able to get to a healthcare worker. Mm. So it's even more than 100 miles. But these healthcare deserts across the United States are major problems. And I think one of the ways we do that is we start training the people in those communities to become healthcare workers. One of the things we saw that I saw when we set up the medical school with Toro, which is in Harlem, which is a great organization, Toro, mm-hmm. and we built it up on 125th Street on Adam Clayton Powell. Over the course of years, what happened was as the faculty started coming in and teaching, they started setting up shop, and we started to acquire more doctors in that 10027 Harlem zip code. That's what we're also seeing here is we develop these centers to provide educational facilities and educational opportunities for people in those communities. People end up staying there and working and providing care in those communities. And that's how we go about solving a lot of these healthcare desert problems in the United States. And not only, I mean, in the Midwest, you could be talking rural Kentucky, western Kansas. There are major problems to provide quality care in these communities. And it's not that the people there aren't providing quality care. It's just there aren't enough of them to provide the quality care.
I was thinking of inner cities as well, like
right.
Camden, New Jersey. Or
right.
parts of
or
Richmond.
East St. Louis.
Yeah.
Yeah, or yeah, Detroit. So all these places. And here's what I say is for probably you and me, we can get in a car and drive 10 miles to go see a doctor. So mm-hmm. it's probably not too big of a deal if we have to do a little bit of travel. But if you're in the inner city and you don't have transportation and you got to rely on the bus or the subway and your child's sick, 2 miles might as well be across the country.
Yeah.
And so a lot of these inner cities, even though, you know, if you're looking at it from an outside perspective, you think, oh, well, 168th, you got Columbia or down in Midtown, you can get down to NYU.
Yeah.
Those if you're living in Harlem and you don't have access to a vehicle and you can't afford, you know, to pay for a cab, those are really far away. And
yeah.
that's why it's so important to provide high quality care to people in the community so they can access it.
These are first world problems that are third world problems and beyond, and yet they're in this country. We're still dealing with this.
And it doesn't have to be. I mean, and we don't need to throw tons of money at it. What we need to do is kind of reallocate our resources. We have to be able to understand that if we train people in rural Kentucky, they're probably going to stay in rural Kentucky. If we train people in Camden, New Jersey, they're probably going to stay in Camden, New Jersey. And so just changing the way we go about delivering our education models is really the solution. And like I said at the beginning, this is the problem of today. If we can solve this, we can really change the way that the planet has existed in the delivery of healthcare. And with technology now, we have the ability to do it. And that's why it's such an exciting time to see the changes happening in healthcare, and I'm excited to be a part of it.
One last question, although maybe I should leave it there, but I have to ask you about artificial intelligence and robots and all of that. Do you see that as being an important part of the field going forward, or are we going to be dealing with human doctors as far as you can see?
As far as I can see, I think in ours and our children's lifetime, I have a feeling it's going to remain human doctors. And the reason for it is I just know my wife or my mom. Mm. If my mom's granddaughter is sick, she's going to want to take them to somebody that's going to touch them, that's yes. going to do an examination on them and kind of be able to talk to her. Maybe in another couple generations that will be resolved. But what I actually see AI helping is helping the doctors make quicker and more accurate diagnoses.
Okay.
And so when a patient comes in, what we try to do is work through what are the possible problems with that patient. Well, if we put in the blood test and we put in the symptoms, the computer can come out with maybe 5 or 6 clinical diagnoses that this could be a possibility. And then the doctor, in their judgment, will decide which one of those is probably the one that this patient is experiencing, and then develop a treatment plan for that patient. And then be able to, and this is another important part of healthcare, be able to adapt that treatment plan based on how the patient reacts to it.
Yeah.
I don't think we're there yet for the machine learning to be able to make those type of adaptations, at least not in my lifetime.
Yeah.